Looking for a new job or recruiting new talent? Kickstart your search on recruitireland.com, where people make better connections. Job seekers, find your perfect match with in-depth company profiles and handy career advice. Recruiters, advertise your jobs and showcase your company across Ireland's trusted media network. Recruitireland.com. Jump on to take off.
Hello, my name is Irene Feehan and you're very welcome to Growing Pains, the Irish Examiner's parenting podcast series. With me today is child psychotherapist Dr. Coleman Nochter, who writes a column for our IE Parenting section out every Tuesday and online. Coleman is the author of the best-selling book, The 4 to 7 Zone. For the next 20 minutes, we'll be talking about primary school children and if they need to do homework. Ask any parent of a primary school child about homework and they will likely complain, saying it's a headache. Some researchers say homework is excellent. It helps children to develop planning and organisational skills, but others argue it's counterproductive, saying it reduces opportunities to engage with free play. Most educators, however, agree that homework should be minimal. Coleman, you have a clear position on homework in the primary school years. You don't see it as time well spent.
No, I don't. I suppose from my perspective, and I've met with so many parents over the many years that I'm doing this job, and they describe how it's just a battleground. You know, homework has become this awful thing that children dread, that adults dread, that parents dread. And oftentimes it's to be done at a time where high levels of stress, you know, just getting in from work or getting lunches ready, dinners ready, getting ready for the next day, rushing off to extracurricular activities. And it just becomes a source of animosity and anxiety and stress. And some children obviously who may have learning difficulties may find it incredibly difficult to engage in all of that extra work, which indeed it is. But even children who are capable find it something. If you say to any group of young primary school children, we're going to get no homework today, it's this big rejoice of a thing, you know.
The cheer goes up.
Yeah. And so if it is going to cause that amount of consternation, there would have to be compelling arguments that this is a vital and important part of their educational journey. And I say educational journey not only from the point of view of academic achievement, but especially in primary school, I think what we're trying to do is create a relationship between knowledge and curiosity and for children to engage in that way. Most children will say that homework puts a dent in that relationship. The idea that, you know, if we have, and I've seen children in primary schools having a well-being week, and as a measure of protecting well-being, there's no homework for the week. You know, and for that, there's an insinuation that homework actually causes difficulty. So for me, without absolutely making this imperative that children need this in order to, you know, survive educational system, it should not exist, especially in primary schools. And we don't have that compelling argument. You know, if you look at all the research, and it is incredibly flimsy, anything that says, you know, it's about habit forming or it might be about this. And while, you know, I appreciate that reading might need to happen at home, maybe times tables at a push. But this idea of a kind of emptiness of filling out workbooks and, you know, just repeating what someone has had all day, it simply is not fair. And as well as it not being fair, it's the damaging relationship between a student coming into the world who's just being introduced to education and how they form that relationship with knowledge, curiosity, guidance, you know, interest. It just doesn't sway for me. I can see more a case of it in secondary school.
Yes.
Again.
To embed the knowledge.
You know, and I think from that point of view, there may well be, if it's very purposeful, if it has a function, and if it, you know, if it's guided towards some degree of achievement or some sort of focus or target, I get that. But for me, the cost of homework in primary school far outweighs any benefit. And don't just take my word from it. You know, there's many educationalists. One particular is Alfie Cohn, who I would have followed extensively.
The American author.
American author, educationalist, professor. And he has extensively researched and robustly puts all the research under the microscope and robust, you know, academic testing to suggest that there are no compelling evidence to suggest it's good in primary school.
I'm also concerned about the parents who want to see their children do homework and say it's a way for me to stay engaged with my child, see what's happening, and for my child just to develop good learning skills from the get-go. What would you respond to that parent?
Yeah, usually I think from that perspective, that comes from a position of a parent who has a child who's very able and capable of doing their homework. You know, again, I think the argument that I need to keep on top of where my children are at. There's many ways in which you could do that. Communicating with the teacher, maybe, you know, and if teachers didn't have to correct homework all the time, they would have much more time to have conversations with parents about that. Why we would feel the need to ensure that every child, children with dyslexia, children with dyspraxia, children with learning difficulties, children with concentration difficulties, have to endure this same battleground just for you to keep on top of how your child is doing doesn't wash for me from that point of view. So from the point of view, and again, the argument about habit forming, you know, if you were making your child bring the bins out every evening, you would form a habit. It doesn't have to be homework in order to do that.
There's other ways to build healthy habits.
100%. And I would prefer to create curiosity and interest and enthusiasm than making someone comply with something because they've always done it.
You're a father of three, and I know there's homework in your house most evenings. So how do you manage that?
With great difficulty. No, I suppose I've three children. My eldest boy, who suffers from dyspraxia, so his organisation of his homework is a challenge. He's fine with the content, but just trying to organise the journal. I mean, what is on for what's due tomorrow, what's due the next day, that sort of stuff. My middle girl has dyslexia. And so homework is a real struggle for her. And I can see, you know, she sees homework as a really unfair second shift. You know, she's come home, she's done her work, she's concentrated all day.
She needs a break.
And she's tired. And then we take out these workbooks and ask them to repeat exactly what they've done. There's no new knowledge in this. This is repeating effort.
And what class is she in?
Yeah, she'd be in fifth class now. And then her little brother has no needs whatsoever. So when he comes in, he flies through the spelling test. It's done in 2 minutes and he's back watching TV. And it's interesting. I think the idea of rewarding effort and outcome is interesting. I would see my daughter over the years, you know, spending 45 minutes learning her spelling test on a Thursday night for the Friday test and really putting a lot of effort into it. Her little brother would spend a minute doing his. Regardless, she would oftentimes come out with 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10. He would get 10 every time. All that we see is the 10 or the 6. We don't see the effort that has gone into that preparation. We don't see the anxiety. We don't see the worked upness of, you know, how will I perform in front of my peers, etc. Homework is a completely different journey for each of my children. One is a 2-minute exercise. And maybe if I had three children who were like my youngest, I wouldn't be half as advocate for this, you know, because it's a simple process. And I've heard parents say, it's 5 minutes, you know, get over yourself, you know, that sort of idea. It's not 5 minutes for everyone. And I would oftentimes ask, and this argument has been said before, if your employer said to you, you know, when you've finished, Irene, you've finished work, I want you to do another hour of it when you go home, and I'm going to test you on it tomorrow. You know, you would say that's unfair. I'm not getting paid for that. You know, I've done my shift, et cetera.
It's not part of my contract.
It's not part of my contract. And from the point of view of, for children, that's what we're asking them to do. And oftentimes, it is perhaps the monotony and the emptiness of that task that I would struggle to see it's having. And, you know, academic benefits and intellectual benefits are different, you know, from the point of view of our curiosity, our interest in things. And I don't really have an issue with projects over a period of time if it's something that a child is interested in. But I just absolutely think the focus of education, especially in the primary school years, should be about fostering a relationship, a good relationship with knowledge seeking and a good experience of curiosity.
Could you give an example or a few examples of how that may play out then? If they just say homework was parked and this was an opportunity when you came home to develop curiosity, to learn about other things in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I would say from the point of view of maybe, and again, not putting an onus or a deadline on things. Like, you know, it's interesting, Alfie Cohn speaks about the kind of circumstances from which is the poorest point of assessing how someone is doing. So something that's time limited, you have to have this done in 20 minutes. That's a poor way of assessing learning. Something that has kind of multiple choice options, you know, that's almost not creating creativity. And something that demands the answer in the way that I want it asks. So it has to be a specific way of answering the question rather than you almost answering a question back. It shows no curiosity in that regard. And again,
there's no exchange there either.
No exchange. There's no endeavor and there's no investigation and there's no thought. And I really think the idea of our children nowadays need to develop their critical thinking styles even more so than ever before, where they are now bombarded with a lot of digital information, which is not coming from reliable sources. We want children to be able to think about information, to question it, to ask it. And again, it's maybe about trying to foster something that would encourage them to do that. So sending them home with a task to find out something about is a better task than come back and tell me what this is about and I give you it going home. Does that make sense?
So that does, yep. Yeah. You know. So, and that encourages them to say whatever, to actually explore and to create new experiences for themselves as opposed to repeating what it is they've gone through in the classroom.
Yeah, and again, one of a great colleague of mine in education said, you know, education is not about, it's about telling you where to look. It's not about telling you what to see. And that idea of, you know, encouraging them to see something from their own perspective is good. And again, you know, that might lean towards some certain children or not. And I think there's another side of things that if I'm asked to do something or if I'm told to do something, I have a very different reaction to both of those things. You know, if you say to me, could you or do you want to, I'm much more likely to do it rather than saying you have to. The idea of you have to almost puts all, there's a context on that all together. So, you know, if they were given maybe over the course of a month or two, if there's something you're interested in, go and look it up and come in and tell us about it. You don't have to, you know, get Pritstick and copy it out, and you don't have to get your mom to do PowerPoint slides. It's going to tell us what you know about it. So you're encouraging again that intrigue and that investigative kind of way of looking at something and reading. And the other thing is our children are moving less. Fundamental movement. You know, the idea of our children are sitting down a lot more. They're getting lifts to and from school. We live in a school environment that's very litigious, so oftentimes running around in playgrounds has to be kind of limited as well. We don't have on-street play or informal play as much as we did before. So now what we're finding is children of the ages 8, 9 and 10 don't know how to jump, don't know how to skip, don't know how to leap. You know, surely there's a useful piece of kind of, and not even homework, but something that they could do to go and, you know, get your mom to video you doing 6 leaps or 6 jumps or to climb something, to control something. All of these fundamental movements, crucially important to their physical and psychological and mental health. Those are things that we could incorporate in apart from the worksheets.
And I think sometimes it's easy to overlook the psychological impact of exercise as well. It's calming, you get more confidence, and other developmental connections are made as well through exercise. It's not just I'm fitter.
It's phenomenal, Irene. The two kind of really core aspects of insight into mental health in the last decade have been sleep and exercise. The importance of movement, the importance of sleep. And when it comes to children and teenagers, you know, that's one of the most reliable metrics on whether somebody has a good level of mental health and well-being versus not. Sleep, appetite and movement will be three of those pillars.
So you'd actually say to the child, let's go out and play games, let's go out and do the soccer, whatever it is you do in the evening. That's where the focus really needs to be, as opposed to sitting down and doing more.
100%. Again, and I think that it gives them a tangible benefit to what they're doing and actually will stand to them. And again, I can't say this more, it forms a better relationship with the task. And I would change, wouldn't call it homework anymore. I think we've already, the brand damage to homework
is well established.
Is well established. And we need to maybe move that, you know.
And I'm thinking a better relationship with between the parent and child as well, because you're not pressurizing the child to get the homework done.
The first thing you say when you come home from school, get your homework out. Right from the off, there's an atmosphere, a sourness between you. You're just like them. I've just come home. And you know, it's really hard to get that back. If you've had a really difficult 35 minutes of homework time, there's another hour of grumpiness and sulkiness that goes on. And, you know, children are tired. And again, you know, there might be some that say we're getting a bit easy on children or we're not giving them too much easy. Again, I think making children do something for the sake of just doing it, where the benefit isn't clear, I'm not so sure that's going easy on somebody. Maybe that's just being more creative or economic with our time.
I'm thinking about teenagers who don't want to engage with homework, so moving on from primary school. And they say, look, I've done enough, couldn't be bothered. And it can be very frustrating for parents to watch a teenager just cut out when we know that homework is a part of the curriculum and helps them to stay up, keep up with the curriculum. What would you say to a child and the parent where the homework is really a problem?
I think it's a wonderful example of how habit forming doesn't work. You know, from the point of view of we've formed this habit. The one thing I would say to any parent listening to this, you cannot make your child learn or study. It's simply, you can lock them in the room, take away all their distractions, leave them there for an hour with just them and their geography book, still can't make them learn. So the idea that we need to be almost incentivizing young people to want to learn, to kind of create enthusiasm. You know, most young people will learn out of maybe a fear of not getting the mark. So they'll, you know, they'll comply out of fear rather than enthusiasm or desire. And again, I would say to parents, you know, nagging doesn't work. You know, you might say, you know, you won't become 10 and you won't get to college. Never in my 25 years of working with families, have I had one parent turn or a child turn around to a parent in that moment while they're arguing on the landing and say, "You're right"? It's just dawned on me.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. We have to almost wait for them to be ready. And in my view, if we create a more or less contentious relationship with education throughout the primary years, then we won't have the animosity of it, or certainly as much of it. But as parents, you can just offer your advice. You can make it, entice it as much as possible. You can make it as comfortable as possible for them to study. But we can't make them do it. And again, the only thing is you end up with higher blood pressure and more stress in your life. And it simply won't work.
You had your own experience as well. You weren't that engaged with homework in school, and your education turned out to be a long-term process.
Yeah, I mean, I was that teenager. No interest in studying, you know, absolutely, you know, the bare minimum. My teachers used to say he looked like he did his homework on the floor. And quite rightly, that probably was where it was done. I was that kid who did it at the back of the bus on the way into school. And I just didn't like the idea of the all-rounder, that I had to do these subjects. I had to do geography. I had no interest in these things. I went mental health nursing because I didn't want to go to college, because I simply wanted to work. And back in those days, you got paid for doing it, so that was fine. But once I went into mental health, I was like, I'm home, you know. And so did postgrad diplomas, masters, later a doctorate in that area, studied for 10 years afterwards because it was something I was interested in. And I can see in third level now when I'm teaching, maybe the difference between the undergrad who's there because they have to be versus the postgrad or the person who's coming back as a mature student who's electing to be there, the difference in the approach, the enthusiasm. And then, you know, for me, I was too young, I was too immature, I wasn't ready for it, and the content didn't fire for me, you know, as soon as it did. So I've been told all my life I wasn't academic. Yes.
You are in an academic institution, third level academic institution lecturing.
100%. And again, that's maybe because the system didn't see maybe didn't offer me something for me to really get enthused about until I was later in my life. And I'd say to many parents who are struggling with that teenager right now, 90% of the time that turns out fine. They find their passion. They go back later in life. They'll go back at 23, 24 after they found something. They may not get there straight away. And I think with COVID and things and with the delays that we've had,
have to make allowances.
The maturity there isn't maybe as, people aren't as focused, or, you know, the idea of the job for life maybe is a thing of the past from that point of view. So from that point of view, give them time. They'll come round.
Trust your child.
Trust them. You know, again, they may not know what they want now, but they may know in 3 years' time, and they'll make choices at that point to best meet their needs.
So if there was one thing you'd say to parents about homework, what would that be?
I think it's about, again, I would say the relationship your child has with learning is so important. You know, what they learn is so not as important as their relationship with it. I've seen children who force themselves to learn because they have to learn and they want, and it's driven by this desire to not get it right, versus a young person who's learning because they're interested in it. They want to find out more and they're almost investing in it. I've seen, you know, I've my own children, I can give you an example. One of them sitting there trying to learn something that they have to learn for school, and it's moaning, whinging. The other day, the two of them were trying to work out how to get a Minecraft server to link, and they were looking at YouTube videos. They were both researching independently.
Quite complex.
Really complex stuff. But the same lad couldn't make toast, but he was able to kind of, you know, because it was something that was interested him, it was something he wanted to know more about. And I think that's where we move it to, you know, try and create something that they gives them the appetite to learn, rather than, you know, again, I would say, how do you get a child to like vegetables? You know, sometimes if they're not there, they might be 25 and turn around and say, actually, I like them now. But at the moment, it's very hard to push that. And it's not to drive yourself around the twist trying to make something happen that either they're not ready for, that the system doesn't fit, and I accept that it might take a little time. Sit back and watch, because it will.
Thank you for listening. Tune in next Tuesday when I'll be talking to Richard Hogan about helping your child in the run-up to exams.